Now, every person caught illegally crossing the United States border will soon be federally prosecuted under a new Trump policy, which could see even legitimate asylum seekers slapped with a criminal conviction. Even more concerningly, the US government has threatened to separate children from their parents should they attempt to smuggle them into the country. We're joined on the line now by our US correspondent, Taylor Kaplan. Good morning, Taylor.
Good morning, Casey.
So how is the US government justifying separating children from their families?
It's a pretty extreme, dramatic step that, you know, many have rightfully reacted to with just, like, is this really the America we want to live in, right? Where children are separated from their parents when they cross the border. It brings to mind all kinds of just Gestapo tactics that you don't want to associate with this country. But the justification of it on the part of the Justice Department is that people who cross the border illegally are breaking the law, and children cannot go to criminal jails where their parents would essentially be going to. So then they would be classified as unaccompanied minors, who federal law in turn requires them to be placed in the care of the Department of Health and Human Services. So they're placed in shelters and then, put in the care of sponsors, be it their families or others who apply for sponsorship. But in a sense, once you treat their parents as criminals and put them in the criminal court system, their kids are left in limbo and taken away from them and put through a different system.
So what happens to the kids afterwards? Do they ever get citizenship, or do they just grow up and then are sent back home?
There are a number of possibilities. I mean, there's a possibility for citizenship down the line. The criminal justice system tends to be more lenient and forgiving towards children who are brought into the country by their parents through no will of their own. So there are a number of different possibilities. I mean, oftentimes children go to live with their parents who are also undocumented, so they kind of go off the grid under the radar. The story of, you know, kids being outsourced to the Department of Health and Human Services, who give them the sponsors, it's brought to attention a report from earlier this year that of around 7,000 children who came to the border alone with no parents, who came as unaccompanied minors with, like, no parents whatsoever with them, of those 7,000 who were put in the care of sponsors last year, almost 1,500 of them have gone missing. When the Department of Health and Human Services went back to check up on their sponsors, about 6,000 of them were, you know, found and properly accounted for. Some, like around 30, had ran away, but about 1,500 have gone completely missing through the cracks of the system. And this is the same governmental division that is supposed to be caring for these children who are taken away from their parents when they're separated from their families at the border. So you have this Trump policy taking shape where parents are treated as criminals and kids are, you know, being put through this completely incompetent system with not enough background checks in place for sponsors who are taking care of them.
Well, that's a really alarming number, actually, Taylor, that of the 7,000, we end up with 1,500 missing. How does that kind of thing go on, and is the government held at all accountable for these large numbers of missing children?
Not really. I mean, there was a congressional study done 2 years ago, which followed 8 kids who came over the border without documentation, who were put through this system and put with sponsors who passed this minimal background check system that really needs to be reformed, But they were put in the care of human traffickers who took him to work on an egg farm in Ohio instead of putting him with a family who could have, you know, taken him to school. Supposedly, the majority of these kids are put with their families. And a real possibility is that many of these 1,500 kids are with undocumented family members who have gone off the grid and hid from the government out of fear of deportation. That's a big possibility. But there is not enough of a background check system on who these sponsors are, who is taking care of these kids, are they being trafficked, are they being properly cared for, and are they going to school, and all those questions. But you have this problem, and then paired with that, you have this new policy on separating families. And on top of just the trauma of, you know, tearing families apart at the border, you're putting them in the care of a system that is broken, that is not properly vetting the people who is putting kids in the hands of.
Yeah, it's awfully discompassionate to just write the policy first and then figure that the rest will fall into place sometime later on. I'm speaking with U.S. correspondent Taylor Kaplan. Now, Taylor, on a bit of a different topic, it's something that we have covered many times before, which is that around August 2016, player Colin Kaepernick took a knee during the American National Anthem in the NFL. This was in protest to gun violence against Black Americans. It sort of swept the league, essentially, and now the NFL has banned it. What has the reaction been from players and fans?
Well, first of all, let's talk about this new policy from the NFL, which is that players can technically protest the national anthem, but they must do that within the locker room. They cannot go on the field and kneel during the national anthem. If you were to go on the field, you had to stand and show respect and patriotism towards the flag. That is the new NFL policy. Kaepernick, who knelt during the national anthem and start kind of a movement within the NFL, kneeling during the national anthem to show protest towards gun violence towards Black Americans, police violence towards Black Americans. It's the most visible, I guess, conjunction between pop culture and discussion of race and social justice in America right now. But you had this new policy that was agreed upon by 31 of 32 owners in the NFL without even consulting the NFL Players Union before writing up this new policy. So many players, rightfully so, are feeling left out of the loop. And if you look at the statistics, 70% of football players, of professional football players within the league, are African American. You have, I believe, 8 head coaches who are people of color within the NFL, but no Black owners. And when you compare that to the fact that 70% of players are Black, that you had no discussion, no negotiation or compromise when this policy was written, you have a lot of players who feel disrespected, who feel like they're not being listened to at a time when they're gaining a lot of attention, a lot of social traction for staging this protest that is very important right now.
One of the important democratic rights we have is the right to protest and to sort of stand in a public place and make yourself known on issues that are important to you. I mean, how come the NFL seems to think that it can obstruct this right and force people to do it behind closed doors?
Well, I mean, in all fairness, the First Amendment protects is about protection from the government, and the NFL is a private organization. It is not the government. They can do as they please. But by not listening to their players, by sweeping them under the rug and forcing them to kneel in the locker room, they're really silencing a huge demographic within their organization that needs to be listened to right now. I mean, one owner of the New York Jets has publicly said he is willing to pay the fines of his players if they are indeed fined for kneeling on the field during the national anthem, and he has received a lot of backlash for that. But most of the owners have gone along with this new policy. The owner of the San Francisco 49ers was the only one to formally oppose this new policy. So you really have an NFL in which the organization is completely at odds with the majority. I mean, maybe not the majority of its players want to kneel during the national anthem, however they choose to protest or not protest is their own prerogative. But you really have this culture war happening within the NFL right now, in which white owners are being pitted against many black players who feel the need, rightfully so, to protest when the state of black America is so precarious, and when players like Colin Kaepernick have a lot of social capital they can use to stage a very visible protest.
It's certainly I think the word precarious is quite right that you use there. This sort of narrative is a bit of a dangerous balancing act. To hear words like white ownership over 70% black players in the United States, I mean, it seems rather scary, especially now that they're silencing them. Is there any way that the NFL is copying it where it probably matters to them most, which is financially? Have there been any sponsors, withdraw any support?
You've had, I can't think of any off the top of my head right now, but you've had some advertisers pull their support during NFL games. And you've had, of course, Donald Trump on Twitter going mad about the league not taking action. So there is the suspicion that his visibility on Twitter talking about this is part of what put this policy into action. And viewership has, in fact, gone down over the past couple of years, because there are probably many fans who see this protest and see their football being, quote-unquote, tainted by politics and just don't like that. To an extent, sports is seen as sort of an apolitical thing in America, one of the few apolitical things left in which everybody can, supposedly enjoy. But, Colin Kaepernick and the people who have followed in his footsteps are using this as an opportunity to speak for the things they believe in.
Yeah, well, the personal is political, and it seems like just about everything else is nowadays. Hey, Taylor, thanks very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Casey.